You're listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. For I Will Be With You. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible.
Welcome back to the For I'll Be With You podcast for the 44th week of the year, from October 28th to November 3rd, covering Numbers 35:29 to Deuteronomy 1:17. So this is the last reading for the book of Numbers, Numbers 35:29 to 35:30 reads, "These shall be for you a decree of justice for your generations in all your dwelling places. Whoever smites a person according to the testimony of witnesses shall one kill the killer, but a single witness shall not testify against a person regarding death." So this may seem sort of like a technical point of law, but it's very important. And what you have to understand is this is an instruction for judges in the Israelite courts to withhold a death sentence for murder only for situations where there are two credible eyewitnesses to the actual killing, meaning that if one person witnessed it, that's not good enough for the death penalty. If there's circumstantial evidence, that's not good enough either. So the reality is it makes it nearly impossible to convict someone of murder and sentence them to death. And the word of a single witness is not enough to justify a death sentence. So, you know, we could argue about whether this is a good idea or not for justice, but it's an important principle in the Bible, and it has to do, at least partly, with the sanctity of life, that you can't, the court has the right to execute someone, but only in very specific circumstances. And for us, what does this mean for us? Hopefully we're not judging life or death situations on a daily basis, but there is something we can learn from this, which is, you know, in the program and in life in general, we often hear things about other people. We hear remarks or descriptions of other people that may not be positive. And I think we should remember, like is in the verse, that unless we really hear it on very good authority from more than one credible person, we probably shouldn't take these remarks very seriously. And, you know, you hear this in the rooms. Oh, that guy, you know, he's a crook, or this, that, you know, negative things, criticisms. I think it's wise to just try and ignore it, because it's not good for you, and it's certainly not nice to the other person. So we can look at this verse as maybe we're to keep ourselves to a higher standard. You know, if two people who are credible say something, then maybe we need to be careful about somebody. And there are people in the rooms you have to be careful about. I mean, that's for sure. But I think it's important to give people the benefit of the doubt. Now, the book of Deuteronomy starts now. So Deuteronomy 1:1 reads, "These are the words that Moses spoke to all Israel on the other side of the Jordan concerning the wilderness, concerning the Arabah opposite the Sea of Reeds, between Paran and Tophel and Laban and Hazeroth and Di-Zahab." Okay, so we think of this fifth book of the Bible as being called Deuteronomy. In Hebrew, the word is Devarim, which means words. So, which is reflective of the fact that the opening line of the book is, "These are the words." So the Greeks called it Deuteronomy, which means the second. And because in some ways the book of Deuteronomy is kind of a repetition of a lot of other things in the first four books. So the Greek translators called it Deuteronomy, like a second version of the Pentateuch. But you could also look at it as being a big speech by Moses, the words that Moses spoke to all of Israel on the last day of his life. So both names, Devarim and Deuteronomy, are meaningful because the book of Deuteronomy repeats many of the things that the Israelites had experienced and learned, along with the most important laws they will need to observe when they move into the promised land. So it's Moses' last chance to speak with the people he loves. And he wanted to make sure that the Israelites would be strong and remember the biblical commandments they'd learned in the wilderness. And Moses had a concern that once the Israelites left the wilderness, where they were surrounded by constant miracles and were in this environment of spiritual solitude and contemplation, when they actually, you know, had to go live life in the land of Israel and be farmers and set up, you know, businesses and deal with money and with each other, that they would be tempted to abandon the principles of the Bible. So the book of Deuteronomy is sort of a reminder to follow the laws that they had learned. And I think this is a concept we can find helpful in recovery. We also need a repetition of important concepts in sobriety to stay in recovery. We don't attend a single meeting, you know, hear the steps and pronounce ourselves recovered for life. And it's been tried. It doesn't work, right, generally. We need regular reminders of why we are doing what we're doing. We need a recharge of the important principles of the program as we make our way through the difficulties of everyday life. So continuing with Deuteronomy 1:1, which says, "These are the words that Moses spoke to all Israel." When the Torah says to all Israel, it means that everyone was present and listening. Every Israelite in the world was there. So just for practical purposes, imagine that before the invention of the amplifier, 3 million people were sitting outside, and they were all able to hear the voice of a 120-year-old man. Okay? Does that sound possible? No. So how is it possible? It was a miracle. That's obviously, it was some kind of miracle. So there are a couple things we can learn from this moment. For one thing, it may sound obvious, but it's a truth that evades many of us, which is you have to be present to hear the messages that will help you stay sober. If you don't go to meetings and communicate with sponsors and fellows, you will not get the benefit of the program. So the Israelites were present to hear Moses. You have to be present to hear the message of the program. And there's also an implication to the phrase, "these are the words." It means that once they are spoken and all Israel has heard them, there is no excuse for not having heard them. The Bible says all of Israel to show that everyone heard. Thus, everyone was bound by them and could not claim that he or she hadn't heard them. And for us, it's the same. We've read the big book. We've done the steps, or we are learning about them. We can't claim that we didn't understand the basic precepts of the program. I mean, when I say that, I mean like the basic precepts of the program. Obviously, there's a lot of sophisticated stuff in the program that comes as you get more time in it. But, you know, the basics, the basic idea, the basic step work, that should be in us. And the program today is a bit like the voice of a 120-year-old man being clearly heard in the whistling winds of a desert wilderness. In fact, I have a funny feeling that Bill Wilson would be about 120 years old if he were alive today. I mean, it's amazing. His voice, Dr. Bob's voice, still is heard loud and clear, even in today's hustle and bustle. And it's sort of like AA is sort of a miracle of this kind, like this old man's voice being heard in the wilderness. Because in theory, you know, AA really shouldn't work. There's no organization this large should function without, you know, any money or proper organization and get its message out, but it does. That alone is really a miracle. That's something we need to appreciate. The fact that an organization of millions of people can function and be effective on its own without any structure, except the most negligible structure, is a miracle. And I think that we can find that comforting. I think I take it to mean that God is helping AA exist. So continuing with Deuteronomy 1:1 says, these are the words that Moses spoke to all Israel on the other side of the Jordan concerning the wilderness, concerning the Arabah, opposite the Sea of Reeds, between Paran and Tophel, and so forth. So what this has been interpreted to mean is that a lot of Deuteronomy, starting with this phrase, this sentence, is a rebuke to the children of Israel. It's sort of a hidden rebuke. When Moses says, concerning the wilderness, the interpretation is that he's referring to the nation's many shortcomings and ungrateful acts of rebellion against him and against God. And the commentators say that the places named in the verse are like code words for various sins that the Israelites committed in the wilderness. So the idea is that the people are supposed to think about what they did wrong in each place and understand the rebuke. You know, throughout the story of the Israelites in the wilderness, they were complaining, they were rebelling, they were causing problems. So Moses isn't specifying these sins, but he's just reminding them of the places where they happen. And for us, I think we have our own stories like this. Like you might say, oh yeah, you know, college was a crazy time, you know. But really what you mean is I got drunk and hurt someone in a car crash when I was in college. Like you're sort of, you know, if someone says, what was college like? Oh yeah, college. That's when I was out of control drinking, right? That you're being reminded of what was really going on. And this is for us as we go through our stories, do the steps, the fourth step, the fifth step. We need to be rigorous in examining how we participated in bad experiences and not, you know, cover them up and just gloss over them. That way we can avoid them in the future and we can get the recovery benefit of thinking through what happened. So Deuteronomy 1:6 and 1:7 says, God, our God, spoke to us in Horeb, saying, enough of your dwelling by this mountain. Turn yourselves around and journey, and come to the Amorite mountain and all its neighbors, in the Arabah, on the mountain, and in the lowlands, and in the south, and at the seacoast, the land of the Canaanite and the Lebanon, until the great river, the Euphrates River. See, I have given the land before you. Come and possess the land that God swore to your forefathers. So, in this rather long description of where the Israelites are going, Moses is recalling that God instructed the Israelites to start on a journey from Mount Sinai to the Promised Land. So they're going to travel from Mount Sinai to the Promised Land. Turn yourselves around and journey. Now, this could actually be a slogan for recovery. Turn yourselves around and journey. It's a reminder that few good things in life happen to those who sit on their rear ends all day. If you do nothing and go nowhere, you're not going to do anything or go anywhere, right? How's that for a profound idea? Get up and go, right? Start moving. But go in the direction that God tells you. We each have our own personal promised land. It's going to be different for you than it is for me, but it's there for us if we strive for conscious contact with our higher powers. And, you know, it's a reminder also that there may be challenges when we get there. You know, biblical Israel was, you know, a land of milk and honey at the time, but what's interesting is that, you know, even today it's still a rather inhospitable place, and certainly quite recently it was almost completely barren. For example, when Mark Twain visited the area of Palestine and in 1867, his quote was, so that's 150 years ago, he said, quote, a desolation is here that not even imagination can grace with the pomp of life and action. He echoed a lot of other sentiments around that time. People visited the biblical land of Israel in the 19th century and earlier, and when they got there, they were like, this is it? It was like a gravel pit, you know, with a couple little huts and people living there. It was really almost nothing going on. So it was hard to understand that this was the promised land, the land of milk and honey. So now, obviously, it's come back a lot in the last few decades, but the challenge for us, the reason I went into this, is that our promised land may not look like much to other people, but it's special for us, and we also have to envision what it's going to look like when we get into it. And So the challenge is to, you know, turn ourselves around and journey to the promised land and see the spiritual opportunity that resides in the place that God promises us. Deuteronomy 1:19 says, "We journeyed from Horeb and went through the entire great and awesome wilderness that you saw." So according to the commentators, Moses describes the wilderness as, quote, "great and awesome" for two reasons. For one thing, the wilderness was full of snakes and scorpions, yet the Israelites were not disturbed by them. God prevented them from attacking the Israelites. And the Israelites were able to see also the cloud of glory and the pillar of fire that represented God's presence among them. This was a time of overt heavenly miracles. So if you were an Israelite in the wilderness, you had constant, tangible reminders of God's presence in your life and God's protection. So the thing to understand now is that God's presence is still very much with us in our lives. We just can't see it very well. Certainly we won't see it unless we're trying to understand what it is. It's not like the Israelites in the wilderness where it was evident and obvious and visible to the naked eye. But our world today is full of snakes and scorpions, so to speak, the equivalent. If you're in Arizona or California, you may have real snakes and scorpions, but symbolically we have dangers in our lives. And God keeps them away from us if we seek conscious contact with God. He keeps us from being bitten, so to speak. And when we look at back at our time of drinking and using, maybe we can also see times when God protected us from quote-unquote snakes that could have attacked us but didn't. Why not? Because God protected us. And I know so many people who have this kind of story, including myself, situations where we really might have gotten hurt or hurt someone else or caused some kind of destruction, but we didn't. We were somehow magically or miraculously saved from ourselves. We can look at that as God protecting us, God doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And so even though we can't see a cloud of glory or a pillar of fire following us around, it's still there. We just can't see it. Deuteronomy 1:16 and 1:17 says, "I," meaning Moses, "I instructed your judges at that time, saying, 'Listen among your brethren, and judge righteously between a man and his brother, his litigant. You shall not show favoritism in judgment, small and great alike shall you hear. You shall not tremble before any man, for judgment is God's.'" So here Moses is talking to the judges, the people who are going to administer justice in the Israelite nation. And he says, "You shall not tremble before any man, for judgment is God's." What he means is that a judge should not be intimidated by someone wealthy or powerful or important. God will guide the decision of the judge and help him arrive at a just outcome. And there are, in recovery, there are people who show up in recovery who are used to being trembled at, so to speak. You know, people who are either important or consider themselves very important, who are used to getting their way. And sobriety can be a real wake-up call to them. And I know, just if you've been active in recovery in Los Angeles, for example, you can see all kinds of incredibly famous people sitting in meetings. People who, when they're outside of these meetings, are used to getting all kinds of special treatment and attention, tons of money, and very important people. But in reality, they need help from you and me, just like any other struggling addict or alcoholic. And if they're working a good program, they act humble in meetings, and they act humble maybe even outside of meetings. And it's important to understand that everyone has their own struggles, no matter what you think is going on with them. And I'll just share an anecdote with you. Obviously, I can't mention the name of this person, but it's a person who's one of the most famous actors in the United States, a person whose face is instantly recognizable. He was in a meeting, and he was explaining how someone once asked him what it was like to be rich and famous. This person went from being a, you know, unknown actor to being a big television star in a period of maybe a couple years. And he says, now, he says, I feel, I'm really the same. He says, it's just, I'm in a different place. Now I get to drink and black out in a multi-million-dollar home, not an apartment. That's the only difference. And I thought, wow, this is amazing honesty. This man knew that if he didn't get sober, he was probably going to die in a couple of years. And he had to do the work and got sober, which he did. And of course, as we know, this is not always the case. Sometimes people who are accustomed to being trembled before approach a recovery as the same kind of thing, like everyone should just be, you know, in awe of them, and they should get their way, and they can't take direction from anybody. They don't realize that we're all the same in the eyes of God, and that God has a plan for each of us if we seek conscious contact with Him. And one of the prerequisites for doing that is to be humble and not expect to be trembled before like a big shot.
You've been listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible. www.foriwillbewithyou.com